Hello and welcome to another episode of Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. This is where we talk to racers and those involved in racing, particularly here on the Isle of Man, about why they do what they do. And what is clear from every single person that I've spoken to in this series is passion is the driver. There's an absolute love for this sport and anything that it can throw at you. And as I speak to you now, we are on the Tuesday of qualifying week for TT 2025. Fortunately, I'm looking out across Douglas Bay at the moment and the cloud is lifting and it actually does look like there could be a session of practice tonight, but we wait and see. It's one of the things, isn't it, here on the Isle of Man, you just never know what the weather is going to throw at you. And somebody who knows about that all too well is our guest today.
So my name's Rob Hodson, Isle of Man TT racer, racing the 2025 Isle of Man TT.
And when I say the word motorbike to you, Rob, what comes to your mind?
Usually this is going to be expensive or something like that, but it's good. Yeah, we just look forward to all the events and just, you revolve your life around it. So it's always going to be, busy but good fun.
And you grew up in a bike family, didn't you? So I'm guessing you don't really remember a time when it wasn't around you.
No, that's it. Being involved all my life, like you say, with my dad. He's been involved since I was born. There was a couple of plaques in his house, that's 1987 I was born. He was winning a couple of championships back then. So, before I was born, he was doing it. And, I've grown up with it, so it was always going to be inevitable I was going to have a do at it, so... Yeah, it's just a way of life for us.
And
I don't know any different.
There's something really lovely, I think, especially when you see the families around the paddock now and the kids are just running around. I mean, some of them pretty much go feral, don't they, during the TT? Because they can, because it is like an extended family.
It is, yeah. You see kids, running about the paddock and playing football and riding bikes and all that kind of stuff. And exactly what me and my brother Jamie did from ever since we started coming over from a young age, so it's good to see that that carrying on with kids and what have you, and hopefully they'll go on to try the TT themselves.
And you mentioned your brother Jamie. How competitive were you two growing up?
Always competitive. He had a bit of an age advantage on me, everything we did, so he was like 5 years older than me, so there was everything we did, whether it was playing rugby or football or racing our bikes in the street. There's always a bit of a competitive thing going on there, so it that carried on to when we all started racing, so it was it's all good fun.
Do you remember the first bike you ever got?
Yeah, it was a Yamaha PW50. That was Jamie's first bike. It was I think it was bought brand new back in when he was about 3 or 4 years old. So he had it for a while and then I had it, and then unfortunately it got stolen, So yeah, that was a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, that was the first bike we both enjoyed, together and learned how to, tried to learn how to balance on a bike, and then move onto bigger things. But it's a really popular bike for everyone's had a PW50, really. So yeah, it was great memories with that.
And that's the thing, isn't it, with being the little brother, you have the hand-me-downs. Yeah, did you have to have his leathers and helmet as well?
Helmet, yeah, which at that time it probably would have spun round on my head, because I've only got I'm still in an extra small now, which isn't it's just the way it is. But hand-me-downs with that, which was good, but we shared everything when we started racing ourselves and that kind of thing, so it was always great with that.
When did you start racing then?
I started in 2005, Jamie was 2004, so there was always, we were both pretty, he had 12 months experience before me, obviously. But yeah, we did a lot of our early racing together, that was brilliant. So yeah, sharing tools and spurs and working in the same garage and stuff like that, it was good to kind of do our early years of racing in that way, because some people just do it on the, and obviously having the experience of my dad behind us, he could guide us with certain things, whereas some people you see racing and you see it and it's not because they're doing things wrong, it's just because they don't know, how to do things. So we picked a lot up from my dad's experience and sort of bouncing off each other with different things. So that was, it was good, yeah.
And was your dad quite happy for you both to follow his footsteps?
It was always kind of suggested back in maybe the early 2000s and stuff like that, suggesting getting a bike, but it was difficult because we're just a working class family. So with him racing himself, he couldn't afford to kind of buy us bikes as well, and he weren't ready to stop racing, so he carried on going. And then when we kind of left school and things like that, we got jobs and could afford bikes and stuff like that, so he definitely encouraged it, really, which was Yeah, he's still involved to this day. He's here with me at the, you know, this year, this week at the with the Isle of Man TT. So, yeah, doing various things and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, he's been there to pretty much, I would say, there won't be many races he's missed, I don't think, you know, in 20 years of me doing it. So, yeah, it's good to have him involved still.
That's really lovely, isn't it? I think when you've got that shared passion and that bond, it must mean a lot.
It does, yeah. And like I was just saying before, you know, people do things differently. We had that benefit of doing things in as a family together, you know, working on the bikes and things. But you see people at, like, club races and newcomers and things, and they turn up with a car and trailer and they're doing things that, you know, aren't necessarily right, but it's not because they... It's just because they don't know, you know. So to have that advantage of being a step ahead of all that, you know, it was good. Yeah.
Some take the stress out of it in some
ways. It does, yeah. Yeah, definitely, yeah. And it's always, you never stop learning with racing bikes, whether it's Isle of Man TT or a, you know, a local club race. There's always something you can do, whether it's on track or your preparation or whatever it is, you know. So, yeah, it's good to have the family bond. And even my mum's involved. You know, she's here this week as well, just, you know, mooching about. And she's here with the two dogs. So, yeah, she's enjoys being in the atmosphere and, yeah, kind of encouraging us along.
And that's the thing, isn't it, for loads of people who come over here for TT and MGP. This is like their annual holiday. And I think it just goes to show how much goes into getting you there on the start line.
It does, yeah. You know, it is... really, in all aspects of it, it's really selfish as a sport, you know. But with that, you know, you're lucky if you can kind of come to the Isle of Man TT and do, you know, a handful of other events and go on a holiday as well, which, you know, a lot of people can't. Well, most people can't, I would say, in that paddock, you know. So it's, once you're here, though, there's not a holiday you can buy that's close to doing this. Even though we're sat here now and the rain's just stopped bouncing off the window, it's... people would ask why you do it, but it's something different.
You mentioned sort of going through school and then leaving it and getting a job where you could then afford bikes. What was school like for you? Did you enjoy the academic side, or were you just thinking about being out there riding a bike?
No, I didn't enjoy school, really. I could do what I had to, but I don't really enjoy... I can't concentrate on things I'm not interested in. So, yeah, when I'm reading through a science book or something like that, only certain bits stick out which I could be interested in, but if not, then I'd switch off, and that's what would affect grades. I mean, I did exams and things like that and passed everything, but not with brilliant grades. I would never go to a top university, but it was always looking forward to leaving school. I had no intention of going onto a college or university. I just wanted to get a job to then go and get a bike and try and race or something like that, you know. So yeah, I ended up with a pretty terrible first job, and yeah, here we are 20 years later still racing. So it obviously, you know, led on to something.
And that's really interesting, thinking about your attention span, because when you're over here racing on the mountain course, you have to pay attention for that 37 3/4 miles. So it just goes to show, and I guess this is a lesson to anyone, isn't it, if you've got a passion about something and you really care about it, then that's possibly what you should try and follow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's two sides to it, I suppose. If you concentrate in school and try and do, you know, whether you're trying to get good grades or get onto a university where you can get qualified to be whatever, you know, a doctor or something, that's brilliant. You can get you can get paid well for it, but you've kind of missed the boat when it comes to racing then, you know, because if you do 5 years studying, then you need to be at it from a young age, which really, even starting at 17 years old, I was probably quite late. You know, I'd kind of missed when people are starting at 4, 5, 6 years old racing off-road bikes and things, I've missed all that, you know, just through the money side of things. And I think you should either do it properly or not bother at all, you know. And it's a big call, because it's like a lifestyle choice, you know. You revolve your life around racing, so if you can't do that, you know, you maybe you shouldn't bother, but I don't know.
Do you think you missed out on anything not starting so early?
I think you get if you start early, like a lot of people in Italian and Spanish championships and things like that, like I said, they're starting at 5 and 6 years old and things like that, and, you know, they're getting the knee down on little mini motos and stuff like that. So that skill, I was only learning that at 17, and they've got 10 years of doing that. It's a second nature, you know. So you miss opportunities where you can be in particular championships or in Spain or whatever, you know. So yeah, the earlier you can start, the better. But yeah, you just need a rich parent, ideally.
What do you reckon 17-year-old Rob would think of you now?
Oh, I would never have dreamt of doing this. It was always kind of an idea of racing on the Isle of Man because we'd always come here all our lives. But the only ambition I had when I had the chance to come and race over here at the Manx Grand Prix was to do a 100-mile-an-hour lap. My sights were set, I suppose, quite low when you think about it. And I did that within, you know, a couple of nights' practice. And it was like, right, OK, we've done that. And then it's the next step and next step. And then, yeah, if we could write a book about it, there'd be a few stories there. But yeah, I think I'd be pretty shocked, you know, if I could look back 20 years and say you'd be at this point, you know, with the team you're with and things like that. So, yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's been a good time.
Again, sort of looking back, what would be the best piece of advice you think you'd give yourself knowing now what you do?
I would say probably just get as much advice and information as you can, but always make your own mind up. You can ask a million people different things, but yeah, pick the advice that's going to benefit you most.
So there you were then, 17, and starting to take it a little bit more seriously, obviously juggling it with having to work as well, presumably, at that age. And I think that's what fascinates me. It's just, it feels like it must be all-encompassing. There doesn't seem like there's much time to, you know, go off and do the normal, in inverted commas, things like socialising and whatever, because it just seems to take everything from you.
It does, yeah. You know, back in 2005 when I first started, I would pretty much every night would be spent in the garage. So, you know, when people were, if you could say, for example, you know, people I went to school with, they've took different routes, whether they've gone to college or whatever. Yeah, it just soaks up so much of your life. And you could say you missed out on, you know, going maybe lads' holidays or whatever, you know, that kind of thing, and buying fancy cars or a house or whatever. But it's just, you can't do everything. And that was my choice to do that. So, and I can't say I regret it, to be honest.
How many parts of your house are filled with bike stuff?
Everything's got something bike related in it, and it's even, you know, if there's something arrives through the post, you'll open it, put it on the side, and that'll be in one part of the house, and then there's something else, you know. So it's always, yeah, there's a constant flow of parts orders coming through. But yeah, everywhere you look is there's something, whether it's a picture or a trophy or parts or whatever. So yeah, it's definitely it's there in every aspect of life.
And how important is it for you to have the trophies and the photographs of significant moments around you to sort of remember, I guess, what you're doing and why?
Yeah, there's only probably one cabinet that's got a few select trophies in, you know, like special ones that were personal to me in a way. Like you go to club races and win trophies and things like that. And there's, if you go into the loft, you know, there's probably boxes, you know, of small trophies and things. But when it comes to clearing them out or whatever, you can open a box and look at them and it'll still mean something. You'll remember maybe something that happened on that day or something, you know. There might be some that are just, I don't remember that, and it goes in the bin or whatever. But yeah, the ones that have been in 2000 and I think it was 14 when IM Gold sponsored the Manx Grand Prix, a couple of races there on the boat over here from Haitian, it was in the race guide, I think it was. It was advertised that, like, the IM Gold would sponsor first, second and third place, you know, with these. They're kind of like a solid block of silver. So that was a big inspiration to kind of push on to get one of them. And I've managed to win four of them, I think. So they're in, like, a, you know, specially designed box. And, yeah, so them ones I don't really want to ever get rid of. And, of course, like, the TT replicas, all of them are special and have got their own story, but the silver ones are, you know, the ones everyone wants to win. So yeah, if we get, my dad's actually got a gold one for 100 TT starts, so I think I'm at about 42 now, so I've got a way to go to get to a gold replica, but we'll see.
There's a space for it in the cabinet, eh?
Yeah, there is.
And you said for both you and your brother sort of racing over here, having come over and watched your dad and been part of that life there, was always something you wanted to do. At what point did that become a reality?
It was kind of a last minute thing. Someone who was doing a bit of bike prep and dyno work for us contacted me in 2012. It was just after the TT, I think it was. My dad had been the TT in 2012, and after that he contacted me and said, there's a guy here who's building a bike and he wants someone to ride it. I'm like, yeah, put my name down for that. It was kind of just like a bit of a, I don't know, blasé thing to say, you know, and all of a sudden it became a reality. So, like, went to crack on it. Even though I've been coming all my life to the Isle of Man, learning the course wasn't something I'd put effort into. You know, I knew parts of it, but so from then, we came over for a couple of weekends just to do laps in a car. You know, we borrowed a car from Carl Roberts over here and came over, me, Jamie and my dad, and we went, just did a good few laps on a Saturday, and yeah, try and learn it from there, because it was all, like I say, all last minute, and then we had to just crack on with getting the bike prepped. Ivan Linton had actually rode it at the Ulster Grand Prix in 2012, and I think he'd been knocked off or something just before we were bringing it to the Manx, so there was a lot of stress involved in it, and we actually brought the bike in, it didn't run, so it was, yeah, it was a bit of a nightmare. So the weather weren't great either, so really, 2012 was my first year, but I kind of classed my first real go at it as 2013. You know, I wish I kind of hung on, and it was through no one's fault. You know, it was just how the weather ended up, and yeah, just preparation and things like that. So yeah, it was that's how that came about. And off the back of that, me saying I've got, you know, this chance to go and ride at the Manx, Jamie thought, well, I've got a bike there, I might as well put an entry in and see what happens. So he did that, and we both came and enjoyed it. You know, it was good. It was good to do it in a way of, you know, we had mum, dad and my uncle came across and a couple of friends and things like that, and it was a small setup, but we got through what we needed to make that year work, and you know, as we've done ever since until now, where we've got more team members and things like that. So yeah, it was good. It was, looking back, it was good, but back then you think, what am I doing here? You know, it's hard work, but yeah, it's all good.
It must have been quite something for your mum and dad to watch both their boys out there.
I would say so, yeah. Yeah, it would have been. And there's a couple of pictures that someone took that I seen the other day, and it was in the, it was back then they had the newcomers race for the Manx Grand Prix, and they were both in the pits for us then, you know, both in the pit overalls and things. So that was good to have them involved in that way, you know, not just sat in the grandstand, you know. And so yeah, actually getting involved and cleaning the screen as the bike comes in and stuff like that, was, it was pretty special.
And I think, did you come fourth in the Newcomers B race?
Yeah. So that was, I was riding a 650 Super Twin. So that was one of those years where it was, they kind of didn't ride in the full wet, I don't think, but it was kind of damp. So we had intermediate tyres, and obviously trying to feel your way around, and everyone's the same because it's a Newcomers race. So yeah, I would like to have got on the podium my first ever race here, but it weren't quite to be that year. We had to wait a couple of years for that.
It wasn't bad though, was it?
Not bad, no. I can't complain.
Yeah. So were you, is it third in 2013, was it, in the Super Twin MGP?
So that was, let me think, yeah, it was. Yeah.
And so, I mean, really in no time at all, you'd achieved that dream of getting on the podium, which is incredible.
Yeah, so the, yeah, long story short, we'd been kind of promised bikes off the a team, and but we had to build them, and we didn't have the funding to kind of carry that through. So it was actually Brian Scott and Rob Vernon. They came to us and said, we've got a bike here. It sat there, which Lee Vernon had been riding. And he said, just take it if you want. You know, it's not necessarily the fastest bike or the best bike out there, but it'll get you around, and that'll be that. So we did just one test day, I think, before that year. And as soon as I set off down Brayle, I thought, this is brilliant. You know, it just felt really good. So in the race, I learned quite a lot riding that bike, as well as riding my own 600. So I learned quite a lot in 2013, and that was, it was good to end up on the podium in that race. It wasn't even a dream come true. It was just I don't know how to explain that. So that'll always be a memorable year for me.
And then I think it was third again the following year, and then 2015 was you on the top step. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, so that was, I think 2015 I had a first, second and a third. So that was every race that was good. It was kind of 2015, the Super Twin race, Tony Morris had let me ride one of his bikes, which was, you know, a really good Super Twin. And there was kind of a lot of expectation. I was starting at number one, and we'd gone fast in practice and stuff like that, and everyone kind of thought, if the bike holds together, I'll win, no problem. And it was like, well, for me, you know, there's a bit more to it than that, as everyone knows. So,
and that's a lot of expectation to carry with you.
Yeah, it is. So it weren't, it, to win wasn't kind of, it was good, it was what everyone wanted, what I wanted, but it was like, right, that's done, I did what everyone expected. So it weren't like special in a way, you know. So yeah, the other races, finishing, I think it was second in the senior, I think, but that we lost the screen came off on the first lap. So it was a kind of a tough call to whether to retire or carry on in that race. And we carried on to the end with no screen, and had a bit of a sore neck, but luckily a trophy to take back with me. So that was worth it. And yeah, third in the 600 race. So that was, it was a good year, which led me on to the TT the following year.
And when you've done so well like that, does it change the way people talk to you, the sort of the attention that you get?
It does. You kind of opened up. I mean, at that time, I was already kind of set up with a team, which led us on to the TT, or sticking with them anyway. But yeah, you certainly, it opens up a few more doors and conversations with people who you wouldn't normally speak to. So I think there is quite a small window to act on that kind of thing. You know, you decide, are you going as you are, or is there maybe better offers or whatever, you know. So, yeah, there's tough calls to make at a pretty short notice, really. But, yeah, it does, people kind of, I don't know if they respect you more or look at you differently or what, but, yeah, just doing what I felt was right is what we did.
So 2016 then, TT for the first time. How different was that from the MGP for you?
Yeah, it was quite a bit different. I mean, we'd done a few years at the Manx, and that was brilliant. But then going to the TT, you're just blending in there. You know, you're not a standout at all. You're just blending in as your first TT. Unless you can arrive and kind of, you know, make a massive impression, then you're just one of the other riders. So it was quite a bit different, and especially stepping up to a 1,000cc bike, that made the track completely different now, you know, compared to the 600 and 750 and Super Twin that I had been riding. So, yeah, that was a big learning curve as well. So, yeah, a tough one.
Yeah, because I think you had quite a few not finishing races during then, from where you'd come from and sort of like the highs of the MGP must have been, yeah, really difficult.
It was. It'd be nice if every race round here could be perfect, but it rarely is. You know, you have DNFs and stuff like that and breakdowns in practice and that kind of thing. So, yeah, first TT to end the way it did, you know, with a couple of breakdowns and that kind of thing. And you just got to rebuild and come back the year after. All part of learning, really.
Was there ever any point where you thought, actually, I don't want to go back?
You think that sometimes when you know, either you have a bad result or the bike's just not, you can't get the bike sorted, or I don't know. Yeah, there are times like that, but then, like, for example, you could leave here, our next one will be probably looking towards the Southern 100 and Oliver's Mountain and things like that. So if you have a good couple of races, it boosts you back up and you build towards things, and then get over winter. And then it's like, you just look forward to the TT. So I think if you're going to call it a day at the Isle of Man, you've got to do it straight away. Otherwise, by the time you get time to think about it, you're back here and having another crack at it.
Yeah. So you did keep coming back, and you did 17, 18 and 2019. And all the time, your lap time's getting quicker and quicker and quicker. And I guess from a confidence point of view, that must do quite a lot.
It does, yeah. Yeah, if you can keep improving, it's quite a big disappointment when you know, if you don't make a step forward in lap times and things like that. But I think you've got to realise that, you know, the weather can have a big impact in your practice time and set up on the bike and things like that. So there's, you know, I think everyone will be the same. Yeah, you've just got to take these things as they come and keep coming back until you achieve your goal, whatever that is.
And then it was 2019, wasn't it? You had an incident, was it in the lightweight race?
Yeah, so that was, 2019 at Rencullen, I think it was. Yeah, the chain came off and wrapped around the back wheel. I pulled the clutch in and tried to release the drive, but obviously with it, the chain being wrapped around the wheel, it was just skidding until I held it up as long as I could, but when it was, you know, kind of out of control, there's nothing I could do, and I was chewing some Manx tarmac, so it weren't an ideal way to finish a race. But yeah, that was it. I was lucky to get away with it. I was relatively uninjured, you know, a few cuts and bruises and things, and the bike had took a bit of a knock, but yeah, I was lucky to get away with that. Bike's all fixed, but yeah, you're lucky if you get away with things around here.
But I guess, again, from a confidence point of view, knowing that wasn't anything, you can't control that, can you? There's nothing you could have done.
No, there's nothing you can do differently. It's, if the chain's going to snap, it's going to snap. A new, brand new one can snap at any time. You know, it's just one of those freak things. And yeah, we've been lucky that it's not happened again. You know, we've had other mechanical issues, which, you know, stop us and things like that. But yeah, it's all just luck on the day. You're either, your bike will keep going or it'll stop.
From your point of view again then, we came into the COVID years, which must have been so frustrating. I can't imagine for somebody who just wants to be out there racing what it was like having those 2 years where you just couldn't.
It was strange really, because you're making progress all the time and then it comes to a stop for a couple of years. It's like, you know, not necessarily coming back as a newcomer in 22, but you know, it takes a bit of time to build back up, you know, to where you was at and things. So yeah, there's a lot of people miss out on a lot of track time and things like that. But yeah, it's all back on track now, thankfully. And once the weather picks itself up, we'll be back out there giving it another go.
How sick are you of hearing how lovely it was in the past few weeks, honestly? And you still do MGP as well. Why is that so important that you want to do that too?
Yeah, I enjoy the Manx Grand Prix and Classic TT as it'll be again this year. You know, there's a lot of effort going into this year's event. Yeah, we're looking forward to being involved. I'm back involved with Greenall Racing for that on the Kawasaki ZX7. So we've had good success with that team and the bikes and things. So last year we had a couple of electrical gremlins which stopped us pretty much every practice session. So by the time the race came around, and it was ended up a one lap race, we was kind of just getting into it, and the checkered flag was out. But yeah, still we finished second last year, so we're all being well, we can push for another win on that one, and that'll be nice.
We often hear stories of riders who get stopped out, particularly during qualifying, in random places. Has that ever happened to you? Have you had to run back or tram it back, get a lift?
So 2023, the very first practice, I left the grandstand on the 600, and we only got to Greba Castle, and the bike had stopped coming up over Crosby, and the engine had, you know, developed a noise and things and just stopped. So I coasted to Greba Castle as far as I could, and going from there, I needed to get back because I'd never ridden any of the bikes before. I needed to go and practice. So I got directions off a marshal across the field through a farmhouse, and they told me it was an old railway line, just follow the railway line. And there was no railway line, but he forgot to mention it was an old railway line, which is now a gravel path. So I ended up with someone walking up the path with the dog for about 2 miles, and eventually ended up back with the team when they were picking me up. So yeah, that took a while, and I think I missed the practice anyway because it was that much of a walk. I started running, but then just gave up in full leathers and helmet. So
yeah, there's something, honestly, we need pictures of things like this when they happen.
Yeah, there'll be many more of them. It's just that's the first one that popped into my mind. So if we can avoid them this week, I'll be doing well.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? So you mentioned Greenall Racing with Manx Grand Prix and the Classic. SMT Racing team, tell us about them.
Yeah, so SMT Racing, Robin Croft, he's over this week as well. That, I suppose, partnership came in 2018. We just borrowed a couple of flight cases off Robin for the Macau Grand Prix, and that's all we got. I think he helped us with some brakes for our own bike as well, and things have just, we kept in contact with him, and then in 23, you know, Robin was willing to get more involved with one bike, and all of a sudden he owns three in the team, so, and a truck. So yeah, he's definitely gone above and beyond what he said he would do for us initially as a team. We keep in contact with him and live local as well, so me and Sean Dawson at Vehicle Recovery Service, we work closely with the bikes and with Robin as well. So yeah, it's a good team dynamic, I think, or I hope it is. From my point of view, it is. I don't know what their take is on it, but yeah, it all seems to work well. Sean owns the 600 that I ride, so yeah, like I said, everyone's kind of put a lot more in than what they initially started as, which is racing ends up somehow. Robin was kind of finished with racing after 2016, I think it was, and all of a sudden he's back bigger than ever. So yeah, I'm really thankful to everyone involved who's over. You know, we've got Robin and Sean and the Greenalls and my dad and everyone who's come over to help with preparations and pit stops and everything like that. It works as a team, and that's how I'd like it to carry on if possible. You know, you see people jumping from team to team, and it's to carry on as we are. Getting in the routine of everyone knows how each other's work. Yeah, it just seems to work well.
You need to have that sort of instinctive ability to communicate without having to say much, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. And there's not really, you have to have certain things. It's all the bike side of it's always serious, but if you can, you know, went out last night for something to eat and had a good laugh and stuff like that. So I think that's important as well, to understand each other and how people work and what they're like. It's always difficult when you've got loads of different characters in one room. So to get everyone, you know, on the singing from the same sheet, it's always a bonus.
And you've got your partner with you as well. Is she into bikes?
You have to ask her. Yeah. Yeah, she's been involved quite a long time. So, yeah, she's got her own stories about the Isle of Man and things like that. But, yeah, it's good to have, like I say, everyone here. She's here, my mum's here, and family are here and things like that. So, yeah, it seems to work. Once we get out on track, that's what we're trying to do. But, yeah, we're enjoying it up to now.
Do you ever wonder what it's like for them sitting on the sidelines watching?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be pretty mind-blowing. I was speaking to someone the other day and they said, you know, they brought their mum and dad over for the first time a few years ago, and they was expecting a bike to come past really fast, but when they came past, they didn't expect the noise and the wind behind it, and like just the kind of thump they have when they come past, you know, being like about 4 foot away from them. So it was like pretty breathtaking. So it is exciting for, you know, I only get to watch at these places when I've broken down, unfortunately, these days. So, you know, you go and watch a MotoGP at Silverstone or something like that, and you're miles away from the track. And it's good to see these, you know, world-class riders and things like that doing their thing. But you come to the Isle of Man and to be so close to the track and it being a public road as well, it's pretty special. But you know, for them to be able to jump on the boat and come and see.
And it's not just here, obviously. You race very successfully at Oliver's Mount, a race winner, Macau Grand Prix. You've got loads of wins to your name in a club level. What do you do that doesn't involve bikes? Is there any spare time?
Not an awful lot, really. No. No. I mean, you've got to do something, because if you're totally just absorbed by bikes, it can be quite draining at times. You do need to step away. So, you know, whether it's just going out to a local pub for a few drinks or whatever it might be, you know, you have to do things when you don't have things to do with the bikes. But there's always something. You know, we've got four bikes in the team that all need preparing and parts ordering and painting and, you know, work on the truck and things like that, which is what we've done over winter. But there's nothing is ever 100% sorted. You know, yesterday we was prepared to go out and practice, and then it was cancelled. The bike's come back to the on, and all of a sudden there's a furring off a bike, and you think, hang on, that was ready to go ride a minute ago, so what's changed, you know? But there's just little bits that someone thinks, you know, we can change that, just modify that or maintain it better or something, you know? So not just for me, for the team, it's like a constant ongoing thing, especially through the TT. The minds are constantly going on what can make that bike safe and best for me, which is, you know, when you've got a team like that behind you, you can't ask for anything more, really.
And how hands-on are you when it comes to fiddling around with the bikes? That's a technical term, obviously.
Yeah. More so when we're back home, I do quite a bit with things. Like I said, Green Oil Racing do quite a lot. My dad and Paul, his mechanic, they'll take a bike and tinker with that. But when it comes to things like running things around, parts ordering or bits of paintwork and things like that, I do that with Sean. So that's, we fill our days quite easily and weekends and things.
For TT 2025, do you set yourself a goal, or is it literally, I mean, obviously, as we know at the moment, the weather's not playing ball. Is it just impossible to try and have a set goal in your mind?
I always try to, well, before we get here, you always want to improve, like we were saying earlier. If you can improve on your previous year, the last race you did, that's always good. I always have personal goals, which I never really say, because I think if I say it, the chances are it'll go wrong or something. So you kind of set your own goals in, or I do in my mind. Other people might just blurt it out and say it, you know. But yeah, so I do set my own goals. Not expectations, I'm just hope to achieve that. Yeah, but the best way to say it is, yeah, just improve on previous, really.
So we'll ask you at the end of TT 2025 what.
Oh yeah, I can
was.
Come back and say that. Yeah, perfect. No problem.
And are you superstitious before you go out? Do you get nerves? How do you handle that side of things?
I think everyone gets a bit of nerves and deal with it in their own way. But superstitions, I always put my left sock on, left boot, left glove. It's always just a thing. I don't know why. Not that it matters much, but if I did the right glove first and then right boot and I crash, then I'll say that's because I put me, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, people deal with things in their own way, but I've got a thing of asking, are the tyre pressures done every time I get on the bike, just then I know they're 100%. And every time they have been, but there might just be once that someone says, oh, I forgot that, you know. So, you know, I always ask. Not that I don't trust the lads to not do my tyre pressures, but it's just a question I ask. And that's about it, really. No, there's no routine I've got to go through.
It's amazing, though, how many people do have a sort of set thing that they have to say and whatever. And I think if it works, isn't it? Because the reality is, with this sport, there are two sides to it. And I think for anybody who's not directly involved, that can be the hardest thing to understand, is why I suppose you'd want to do something that potentially can be dangerous.
Yeah, that's it. And if it all does come down to, I suppose it is superstition, really. If you have a good result and you've got, I don't know, a particular pair of underpants on, then you wear them every time if you can, you know. But it's just like, maybe more of a routine that I do. You know, I've got a three-year-old daughter and I always put her left sock on first, you know, so that she's not going right racing a bike. So it's just something that I do, if she'll let me. Yeah, just that's it, really.
So what happens then if your three-year-old daughter in a few years' time says, actually, I do want to go riding a bike? How would you feel?
I'd rather she played netball or something like that, you know. So we'll see what happens with that. But she's not, I mean, yeah, she's been around for around bikes from a young age, was never bothered by a noise, but suddenly she is. So maybe that might just, yeah.
You're hoping that's going to
pull her off. Yeah, that might have scared her off a little bit in the least cruel way possible. But if we can keep her away from that, I'll be happy with that.
Just finally, I mean, obviously for Titi, you kind of immerse yourself. It's like a little family, I guess, that you're coming back to because you see the same faces every year. What's it like down at the paddock at the moment?
Yeah, you get here and it's good to see people you're not seeing for a while and things like that, and, you know, share what you've been up to and stuff like that. But this morning, you know, you see people the drowned through, and it's like everyone just wants to get on the bike now. You're sick of looking at the same people and the same morning with the same bikes, and that's just in our own team. So, yeah, you just want to get going now.
And do you think your dad loves it as much as he ever did?
I think so, yeah. I don't think he'd miss it. You know, if he can get here, he will do. Yeah, he's been a way of life for him for a long time. So had to take a bike up to the dyno for some work done. And he was up there for about 7 hours, I think, on Sunday. So, yeah, he didn't move from that spot. Someone took him some lunch up and he ate that and stood there with it until it was time for it to be sorted. So, yeah, he's still pretty up for that, you know, up for that kind of thing and helping out where he can. You know, if I need something doing that he can do, you know, whether it's driving to collect something or drop it off when we're back home, he'll go and do it without hesitation, you know. So, yeah, he's still full on with it.
I guess, well, it's been such a big part of your life and your boys' lives as well. It'd be hard to give up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, yeah. So we'll continue as long as we all enjoy it, and that's what it's all about. You know, I think it's the same for everyone who's, not just myself and family members and things like that, it's sponsors and everyone, because if you arrive and it's miserable in camp and things don't go well on the bike and you think, what are we doing this for? You know, it costs that much. You have to enjoy it.
Well, we have everything crossed for the weather. I'm going to take a look out. Look, it's a bit brighter now. Can you see that?
Oh, you can.
Might be
just
a yellow blob in the sky soon. Rob, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much. Where can people follow you on social media to see how you're doing?
Instagram and Facebook. I'm just trying to think of me. It's Rob Hodgson Racing on Instagram and Rob Hodgson 44 on Facebook.
Obviously, you've got a slight accent. Where are you from?
From Wigan.
Yeah. Right. And has Wigan got any other big biking names that have come out of there?
So there's obviously those three of us, me, Jamie, my dad. There's been Josh Daly. He's no longer racing now. John Ingram, the local lads. Russ Mountford. He did the TT for a long time. I feel bad in case I miss someone out now that I can't think of. So there's a few lads at the Manx Grand Prix as well, who I think will be over this year. So, yeah, it's a small town, but, yeah, we've had a few races in it. So, yeah, I'm sorry for everyone I've missed, though.
Well, we wish you all the best for TT 2025, Rob.
Thanks very much, and thanks for having us.
Rob Hodgson, just brilliant talking to him and reliving some of those family memories that he was able to share with us. And we do wish him all the very best for TT 2025. It'd be great to see him up there at the top. If you would like to follow Rob's progress, his social media pages are in the links in the podcast page. And this podcast is brought to you, as ever, by Kawasaki Insurance. And you can find out more about them and what they can offer you by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. And if you'd like to be part of the podcast yourself, I'd love to hear from you. Beth Espy at manxradio.com. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.